state your correct name for the record.
ESPN 97.5, presented by Zadok Jewelers. KFNC, Mont Bellevue, Houston. This is Late Hits on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN975.com.
Presented by Texas Card House. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Patrick Creighton and Jason Braddock.
Late Hits, ESPN 97.5. We are the only live, local, and consistent evening sports radio show in the city of Houston. Joining us right now on the HRMP guest line, he covers the NBA for Yahoo Sports, for NBC Sports, for Real GM, and more. So our buddy Keith Smith, nobody has been out in front on the NBA's plan to return around Disney World more than Keith has. Hey, buddy, how you doing?
I'm doing good, Patrick. How are you?
Doing all right, brother. So let's talk about what's going on. We might have actual dates. We might have an actual plan. I guess there's a few plans, and they don't really have a consensus on any of them. But what's the latest right now with the NBA and their plan to return?
Sure, yeah. There were four plans presented to the Board of Governors today. There was 16 teams, 20 teams, 22 teams, and 30 teams. All of them, from what I understand, included some semblance of playing regular season games, if for no other reason than as warm-up to get ready for the playoffs. But what I do know from at this point is the 30-game idea or 30-team idea is essentially out. That is, you know, essentially off the table. They are not going to bring all 30 teams to the to Walt Disney World here in Florida. They're going to, you know, really move forward with a different amount. And it looks like what they're kind of circling, honing in on, is the 20 or 22 team plan, rather, where everybody would come, they'd play around 8 regular season games. That would, for the most part, shake out the seeding in both conferences, and then they would move into a mini play-in tournament for the 8th seed in each conference, and then that's how we would get our 16 teams. And I've been told it is highly likely that they stay with the conference format for the playoffs.
All right, and because you said that they're looking at this 20 to 22 team, I guess they're the leaders in the clubhouse right now. Now, if they're going to play a handful of games to finalize seeding and get all that, how do we address the fact that some of these teams may have been scheduled to play teams that are not in that 22? Have they figured out how they're going to do that, or are they just going to have everybody in your conference, you play each team one time?
Yeah, it's just going to be the teams that are there. Unfortunately, you're going to make a schedule out of those teams that are there. That's going to be it. There's no way to make up for the fact that, I forget who it was, maybe New Orleans had 2 games against Cleveland left. You're just not going to have that. That's not going to be the ability. They're not going to be there. A big chunk of the reason why was the general manager has made it pretty clear from the vast majority of those teams that are very far out of the playoffs that they just didn't have a lot of interest in coming back. Some of the players spoke up that they weren't overly interested in coming back. And then the NBA really looked at it and said, you know, we can do this if this is what the Board of Governors all really agree we should do. Then most of that, though, becomes, it's a revenue play. You're trying to drive up revenue by having more games, more teams there. But the reality is, I think they're really looking at it and saying, it's just not the right thing to do to bring that many teams, especially when some of them, they're really just playing out the string.
All right, so just put the parameters out there that you've laid down. Return to play in the NBA is what we're hearing in about 2 months, July 31st, almost 2 months from today. Then you also have use Orlando as the bubble city. And what it's sounding like most is that they're going to return with 20 to 22 teams. Did you say 8 regular season games for the rest of them to play out?
Yeah, that's what they're saying. Yep.
All right, so about 8 regular season games to play out, a mini play-in tournament with the 8 seed spot up, and they would right now leaning towards sticking to East and Western Conference format, which is typical of what they've played with for the longest time running. All right, so with all that in mind, when you look at, have they kind of let you know the parameters of how that play-in tournament would be situated? And if we're talking 20 to 22 teams, I think we're probably somewhere around where we were last time when we were speaking about this, to where it's mostly those Western Conference teams outside of the top eight that would be in the calculation for these extra 4 to 6 teams.
Correct. You're right on that. It would be five. If they go with 22, it would be five teams from 9 to 13 in the Western Conference that comes. How I was told they reached that marker was, I believe, the Phoenix Suns are 6 games back.
Right.
And they looked back historically with the amount of games to play and found, all right, there are historical precedents for teams that were 6 games back with 15 to 19 games to play that made up that deficit. And that's how they settled on the amount of teams that they're looking at bringing.
Interesting.
Hey, it's Keith Smith, NBA insider with Yahoo Sports, NBC Sports Pro Basketball Talk, Real GM, and more on the HRMP guest line with us right now. Now, I guess the target date is July 31st. That's the date that's been reported. Is that, as far as you know, is that a pretty hard and fixed date? Like, this is like a realistic, you know, circle on the calendar?
I wouldn't necessarily call it hard and fixed, but I'd say that is definitely what they're honing in to get everybody down here in advance of that, get everything up and running. There is some proposals on the table of really starting this quote-unquote training camp environment by bringing in the teams to Walt Disney World in early July, and that would be where they would really wrap up and ramp up the training camp part and then go into the regular season right around July 1st, if not right on July 1st. That date's special to me because that's my birthday. So that one's pretty well stuck in my mind.
Now, you had said about, you know, how they would keep the conference play. They weren't going to go to the, I guess, 1 through 16
right.
seeding. So does that mean if they bring 20 or 22 teams, talking about 10 or 11 teams from each conference, they're going to play each other, and then they're just going to go into the regular 1 through 8 seed of each conference?
Yeah, so it's actually going to be 13 teams from the West if they go the 22 route, and then it'll be only 9 teams from the East, because the Wizards are the only ones who are within, I believe it's 5.5 games of the Orlando Magic for the 8th seed. So it'll be a little bit unbalanced, but again, it goes back to they went back and looked and said, with the amount of games left, we've seen teams make up this much of a deficit, so they feel good bringing those teams in. There's also by bringing a couple extra teams, you add a couple more games and from there. But it does sound like they're going to go into the traditional East and West brackets. The big reason with that is Eastern Conference teams have absolutely no appetite for the 1 to 16 seeding. They think that's going to make the pathway to the NBA Finals too difficult for any of the teams. And they really don't want to look at it and say, hey, we worked all year in the conferences to earn our seedings here. We don't necessarily want to have to mix this up the way it would shake out.
That's such a weak response from the East, in my personal opinion. I mean, like, no, we realize we have the weaker conference. We want an easier path to the finals. I understand it. I just think it's a weak response from the most competitive athletes in the world. Getting back into this, I've kind of been fiending to talk basketball. It's been so long to actually talk basketball. So I'm sure you've seen the James Harden weight drop, the weight loss there, reportedly around 20 pounds. Kevin Durant, we've been away for so long. Where's he at on the injury front? And other guys who's been banged up and injured that could actually come back and play. What's some of the topics in 2 months that you're mostly focused over here in the next 2 months?
Yeah, I mean, the two guys who look really phenomenal from the pictures that have come out on social media are James Harden and Nikola Jokic. Jokic looks
really,
real thin. Yeah, he looks fantastic. Now, what's funny is I was talking with a trainer just today, and one of the things that he told me is we're not as worried as we're seeing guys through these voluntary workouts coming back in. We're not as worried that these guys are coming in overweight. Some of these guys are coming in a little bit underweight, because they haven't had the team, nutritionists. They're not just eating at the team facility and the like. They've been, for the most part, on their own for a couple months, and that's one of the things that they're curious about. Now, what I'm hearing is everybody's in pretty good shape, and not necessarily basketball shape, but good shape. Sure. And that's why it's necessary to do, you know, a minimum of about 4 weeks or so to get everybody up to basketball shape. A couple of the, on the injury front, though, you asked, one guy that they're really hopeful about is the Philadelphia 76ers with Ben Simmons. He had a back injury, if you remember back, that it kept him out for a while, and he was going to be out for, looked like, the rest of the regular season and questionable to start the playoffs. Now it looks like they're hopeful he'll be healthy and ready to go. Now it's a bath, so, you know, he could be feeling good today and not feeling good tomorrow. We'll see. As far as Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving go, that's a very popular question that has been asked over and over again. Is there, these guys going to be ready? The Nets have said, yeah, probably not. Probably not anything we're looking to do. Kevin Durant's business partner, Rich Kleiman, came out and said he's not playing this year. It'll be next year. And in the sense I'm continuing to get is, and maybe they're pulling a smokescreen on everybody, but is they're looking at that as a long-term investment. They don't want to do anything where let's bring these guys into what could be considered a weird or wonky environment. Let's just be cautious. We'll play out this year, whatever comes, and then we'll start fresh next year with those guys fully healthy and ready to go.
Yeah, I can't imagine that they're going to come back, because if you're Brooklyn, everything, you know, all the mystique, the hype, the push for your ticket sales for next year, that's all based around the promise that comes with Durant and Kyrie being healthy. And if, you know, you only get a couple of weeks to get together, that's not a whole lot of time. For Kyrie hasn't played that much this year, and KD didn't play at all. And
let me play devil's advocate with you too.
I wouldn't want to risk that. I wouldn't want to risk another injury. I'd want to keep that mystique for tickets.
Wouldn't there be a chance, though, to both of you guys, wouldn't there be a chance for Brooklyn, out of all the teams mentioned, when you think about that sleeper team that could come up and steal a championship, for lack of a better word, Spencer Dinwiddie, Caris LeVert healthy, Kyrie Irving, Kevin Durant, Jared Allen, and DeAndre Jordan. I mean, this team has some deep talent. You have them all together. Now, if they're all healthy at the same time, even if KD or Kyrie 60, 70, 80%, couldn't you see a chance that maybe the chance of stealing a championship away during this unusual format, especially in a weaker East? It'd be too hard for me to pass, but that's my opinion.
Yeah, I think your challenge there is that's asking a lot of, especially Kevin Durant, after not playing for what at this point will have been an entire year.
Fair.
To come in with 8 games to get ready and then to be Kevin Durant, or even 80% of Kevin Durant. You know, the assumption has been, even, you know, had things not, you know, shut down and the season had gone normal, that next year it was going to probably take him till game 25, 30 to really feel like Kevin Durant again and start looking good. And that's assuming he even gets to that point. That Achilles injury, you know, we've seen, you know, unfortunately, that's the career killer for so many of these guys. That's the really tough one that, you know, takes these guys down. So I think that's just a lot to expect. And I think that's why, from the Nets side, I think there's also a little bit there of, hey, if this guy's only going to be 80%, let's not show that now. Let's wait, and, you know, we'll see, and then we can kind of build our roster out with some guys that maybe look a little bit different and the like. And I think the Nets, they've shown, if nothing else, they kind of stick to their plan and they see things through. And I think they've got a pretty good plan in place, and I don't think they're going to deviate from it.
Keith Smith, Yahoo Sports, NBC Sports Pro Basketball Talk, Real GM with us on the HRMP Listen Line. Keith, now, you had mentioned that there might be an unbalanced number of teams between the two conferences. So if they were going to do 20 to 22 teams, are they only going to take the top 8 in the East? Because after Orlando, I mean,
well, he was saying 9 in the East, 13
so
in the West.
9 in the East. So Washington's a game and a half better than Charlotte, so they would get in. And then in the West, you'd have, what, Portland, New Orleans, Sacramento. Where does that list end?
San Antonio and Phoenix would be the other two.
Well, so they're not going to get 5 extras in the West and only 1 extra in the East.
Yeah, 9 and 13. So you'd have 9 and 13 of each. So the playoffs wouldn't be 9 seeds and 13 seeds, right? Those last 5 would play in for the 8 seed, and the 9 and 8 seed would play in the East, correct?
Yeah, so what you're looking at is finish out the regular season with everybody for the majority of, you know, the 1 through 7. That kind of slots out your playoff seeding. and you see where everything shakes out there. And then it sounds like what the idea is to do a play-in tournament between 9 and 8 to see who gets those last two spots. Is that kind of a little bit of the consolation to them of, all right, you know, we know you're not getting a full 82 here, so let's give you, you know, the benefit of the doubt. We'll do a little play-in and figure out how you get in, whether that's a one game or a best of three or what that looks like. One of the things I was told is we could do it as a best of three, and then all those other teams, they get a couple days off to rest up after this. It's likely to be about 8 games in 2 weeks, which is more than the NBA generally does. You know, I generally see, you know, 4 games in back-to-back weeks each week. So that's what it sounds like. But the reason why it's cut off where it's cut off is, it was 6 games. If you were within 6 games, with the average amount of games left being about 15 to 17 games or so, that's where they cut it off, because the belief was, the history tells us, we've seen teams make up 6 games with that many games left, and that's why they cut it off where they cut it off.
He's Keith Smith, Yahoo Sports, NBC Sports Pro Basketball Talk, Real GM, on the hotline with us. Follow him on Twitter at Keith Smith NBA. Buddy, you've been on top of this before everybody else was on top of it. Always appreciate you taking some time with us, brother. Thank you.
I appreciate it. Thank you for having me. Y'all stay safe, you and yours.
Same to you, Keith.
Hi, Keith Smith with us on the hotline.
Playing out those last 8 regular season games for these teams, you've got the Rockets 1 game back of the 4 seed. They're currently the 6 seed. They're 1 game back of the 4 seed and 2.5 games back of the 3 seed. This is going to be exciting if it goes down like this.
You know, in the West, where there's the opportunity for so much movement, you know, you mentioned, you know, the Thunder and the Rockets have the same record.
Mm-hmm.
The Mavs have the same number of wins, but they got 3 more losses. Both the Thunder and the Rockets are 2.5 out of third, 4 games out of second. So 8 games, probably not getting second, but one of those teams between the Jazz, the Thunder, the Rockets, it's feasible. You could go up 3 spots in the standings.
Well, the other part you have to remember about this, that you know, we're in uncharted territories. These are all playoff caliber teams that you're going to be playing. There's no easy schedule. And as we monitor throughout the years, the Rockets have one of the best records against teams with winning records. It's the poor team they struggle to win.
Yeah, that's true. That is absolutely true. You did a nice breakdown on that earlier in the season. Get to some of your texts, your tweets, your calls, 713-780-3776, 713-780-ESPN. Slate Hits.
ESPN 97.5. You're listening to Late Hits on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Presented by Texas Card House. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Patrick Creighton and Jason Braddock.
Hey, join our ESPN 97.5 newsletter now. You stay up to date on everything sports, what's trending. You can participate in weekly contests and giveaways. It's easy. Just go to ESPN975.com and subscribe. Do it tonight. Get on the list. Start getting all those contests and giveaways and all the info. ESPN975.com. Now, we just talked with Keith Smith, Yahoo Sports Pro Basketball Talk, and getting the latest on the NBA's plan to resume. And I think it's more when. I don't think this is if. I think this is when with the NBA and the July 31st seems to be a pretty solid target. He said it wasn't written in stone, but
right.
it's basically that's the day that they're targeting. And of course, anything that you target is, you know, subject to change if there is some kind of massive change with the virus. But assuming that everything stays on track the way it has, and we don't have a big second wave or something that hits in the next month or two, that appears to be the date of getting the NBA back. And you know, there was an article that you guys had pulled up earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Is the disrespect of the Rockets just this blatant and this like over the top?
Are you talking about the one from Vincent Frank?
Yes. So Vincent Frank, a
sports me and Vince know each other pretty well. He's actually the only person when I broke this story on Kaepernick, he had a source that verified. He was the only one in the country that verified my report on Kaepernick when it happened instead of a year later.
It goes into something from Daryl Morey that he posted on the Rockets Facebook page. He had been asked about, you know, what's your prediction for the Rockets this year? And he said, we're focused on the title. Short of that, we'll be disappointing. James is one of the all-time great players. My job is to give him the best chance to win the title. Same with Russell.
Is it weird to you that people would probably have such an issue with James Harden being mentioned upon the all-time with the all-time greats?
People have a lot of issue with it because, oh, well, he doesn't have a ring. Because, you know, if you don't have a ring, how can you be an all-time great? Like Karl Malone, John Stockton, Charles Barkley, Patrick Ewing. How could you be an all-time great if you didn't have a ring?
So that's why I never faulted Kevin Durant for going to the Warriors, because he just threw back in the face of people how stupid that comment is. You know, that if you don't have a ring, you can't be among that group. He's like, all right, I'll go get a ring. Well, now you're going to say, wow, you went and loaded up on a super team. Well, so did Jordan and most of these guys.
That I find is really interesting because let's say instead of Kevin Durant going to the Warriors and coattailing a ring, where now, of course, KD gets a full pass on everything from the media, which is ridiculous. But let's say that was James Harden. Does James Harden now get a pass because he, you know, got a ring or probably would have had two rings with Golden State, you know, riding on coattails? Or, you know, I mean, is that if going to a team that had already won and had been in the finals back-to-back years and had just set the record for most wins in a regular season.
Right.
Like, you joined that team because of an anomaly in the salary cap that allowed that team to have this, like, huge amount of cap space.
He got a ring.
Would never happen again, and you get a ring that way. I think that's fraudulent. But, you know, NBA soft-ass media, oh, no, Kevin Durant, all-time great, he's got a ring.
But see, that's how I didn't mind it because I thought it poked the fun at how stupid that conversation is. That if you don't have a ring, and how many people after he won those MVP awards there in the finals and won those championships, all of a sudden, you know, it's LeBron and KD, best two players in the league, which it had been that way for a long time. But it's just, all right, now you get this ring, which, again, like you said, to your credit, you've just gone and added on to a championship team. You're taking one of the top two players in the world at the time and adding them to a championship team. And I don't think you can get away with saying, well, you didn't really earn that ring. Well, before I couldn't be among the greats for not having a ring. And now I have a ring and now I manipulated the system. No, this is it. You fit it on the salary cap. You built the best team. And you look at what Jordan's team did in the 90s. Those were super teams. Those were super teams.
Put the best team together?
Right.
You know, and like Robert Horry.
Yeah.
It was just quoted, you know, within the last week of, you know, using rings to determine who the best player is mm-hmm. is stupid.
Yeah, I mean, you
because otherwise he's the greatest player of all time.
Well, next to Bill Russell,
Robert Horry.
Right? Jordan never got seven.
Nope, no, he didn't. He probably could have, but he was too busy being a quitter.
Nice, well played.
You know, it took Jordan. Let's see, you know, we always make fun of Scottie Pippen because Scottie Pippen quit in that 90s.
Yeah.
Was it the 94 series where he decided he wasn't coming out? But Michael quit the year before, and then Michael quit again. So Michael actually quit twice.
Double quitter.
Scottie only quit once.
But no, I like what Morey says here. Anything less than a title is disappointing. I totally embrace what he's saying here. Again, I know Vincent Franklin, good guy, everything else. But sometimes when he writes about the Rockets or different things, there's things in there that kind of irk me. Like in this article, he mentioned that Houston entered the season. This is a direct quote from the article. He said, Houston entered the season with NBA title expectations. only to post a 40-24 record. I mean, this just lets me know how spoiled not only Houstonians, but the nation is with James Harden and his Rockets team. When you say only to go 40-24, he said that's currently good enough for the sixth seed in the Western Conference. But he conveniently leaves out the fact that Houston's one game back of the four seed. They're 2.5 games back of the three seed, and the Rockets are projected to finish 51-31, 20 games over 500, 50 win season, and they only
suck.
Right, that's my point. I'm like, dude, yes, and so did the Clippers, the Lakers, the Bucks, the Celtics, everybody. You know, you've had about 5 to 10 teams that came in with championship aspirations, and because you're on pace to finish 20 games over 500 or with a 50 win season, I'm supposed to expect they collapsed and didn't live up to it?
With all the injuries that they've had.
The trades, the injuries, the rest. I mean, it's a little bit silly. But yeah. No, I think the Rockets, it'll be interesting to see what happens, because Keith said something very interesting last segment. He said that they're going to try to fit eight regular season games into 2 weeks. We already know Russ spent most of the season resting, or the entire season resting, either in the front or tail end of back-to-backs. Is Russ going to continue to rest, or is he at a point now with this extra two-month break that he can play? Because if he's resting, I don't know how far the Rockets move up, but if Russ is playing these last eight regular season games, getting fine-tuned for the playoffs, I think the Rockets finish with a top-four seed in the West.
I don't know if Russ is going to play back-to-backs for this final eight games unless it's, you know, one of the last couple of games that it matters for them to
give you home field. I mean, home court advantage in the playoffs, right?
But if they have back-to-backs in the postseason, we know Russ is playing.
No, yeah, absolutely, in the postseason. But those eight regular season games in 2 weeks, that could be tricky for the Rockets.
Is that Sunday, Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, Monday?
You got 6 days off in 2 weeks, yeah.
Friday, Sunday. You play every other day. You start on that Sunday, you start on the 31st and play every other day for 2 weeks. There's your eight games. You play eight games in 15 days.
Be interesting.
Play it.
ESPN 97.5.
This is Late Hits on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN975.com.
Presented by Texas Card House. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Patrick Creighton and Jason Braddock.
Late Hits, ESPN 97.5. Patrick Creighton, Jason Braddock with you. We are the only live, local, and consistent evening sports radio show in the city of Houston. And it's an Ask Us Anything Friday. On the text line, we got a really long text that goes into a lot of the racial discussion that's going on in this country right now. We did three segments on it at the start of the show, so we're going to leave that there. Get the podcast, podcastmania.com, on iTunes, on Spotify, wherever. If you missed the first three segments of the show, we addressed it plenty there.
And we had Keith on to kick off the second hour, right? Was it the second hour we had Keith?
We had Keith start at 8 o'clock.
So I would definitely, if you're an NBA fan or interested in one sports or coming back, he gave us a wealth of nuggets there in that interview. We went a little long with him because it was just such great information. I'd definitely hit the second hour of that podcast as well to catch you up on all the details with the NBA's return.
Somebody else asked if we could go through the dispute with MLB and the pay scale, and we spent a lot of time on that yesterday.
Nobody asked you that. I'm just kidding.
We spent a lot of time on that yesterday. We really broke it down. So if you want the MLB, MLBPA, you know, splitting of the pie breakdown, that is on the podcast from yesterday's show. Just download the podcast. Every bit of information that you want is in that podcast. So you can get that there as well. Texans did a little contract shuffling today. Now, you've been talking for months the Texans should legitimately just part ways with Zach Fulton, who is due $7 million this year, $7 million next year, but none of it guaranteed. Part ways with him. Upgrade at the right guard position. Larry Warford was a guy that you had
absolutely
mentioned.
And they had initially said they had interest in.
Gabe Jackson was another guy that you had mentioned. Well, the Texans apparently are not going to move on from Zach Fulton. What they did was they reworked a deal for him. So instead of 2 years, $14 million, no guaranteed, he is going to be guaranteed $5 million this year. And he has $3 million in non-guaranteed money next year. So he gets, basically he gives back $2 million in cap space this year and gets to keep his job.
It's a good deal. It's a good deal for the team. It's a good deal for the player. I think you definitely should have upgraded that right guard position with either Larry Warford or pulling off the trade for Gabe Jackson, whatever it is. I don't think with this move, I don't think it concludes. I mean, more than likely, they're done with that right guard position and bringing in a vet once you work this deal with Fulton. But I don't think this necessarily means 100% conclusive that you don't bring another offensive lineman guard position to compete at that right guard position. This is why. Zach Fulton's best position is the center position. When Nick Martin was missing time, he looked like an upgrade, actually, over Nick Martin, excuse me, I said Zach. He looked like an upgrade over Nick Martin there at that center position, at that right guard position. I'd take Warford or Gabe Jackson. I would still be interested in signing Larry Warford or trading for Gabe Jackson if I'm the Houston Texans, because the way Nick Martin's contract is set up, you could move on from Nick Martin next year and can really double down on this move, saving you money. You save money with Fulton here. You upgrade that right guard position. You let Zach Fulton be your backup at all three interior positions. And then next year, you can actually move on from Nick Martin unless he takes a huge leap forward, get that contract off the books, save money, and slot Zach Fulton in at that center position. So it would still make sense to go get Larry Warford or trade for Gabe Jackson, but I doubt they do that because you have to pay Deshaun Watson.
Who's the guy on the line that has to take the biggest step forward?
The guy, Zach Fulton. Zach Fulton. I mean, if you're talking about, well, if you're saying they have to take the biggest step forward, then you're probably saying Titus Howard, because the most important position is bookends. And if you can, the tackle position. And if you can take Laremy Tunsil and get Titus Howard anywhere close to Laremy Tunsil, and that's your bookends for Deshaun Watson for the foreseeable future, win, win, win. But as far as upgrading the play to make the offensive line go to a whole nother level of play, then I would say Zach Fulton has to upgrade his play at that guard position.
Now, there's a couple of things going on, little smaller things going on in the NFL. And one of them is, you know, we've heard the talk about, will the NFL pipe in crowd noise during NFL broadcasts? Now, this conversation is tempered a bit by the fact that if you have an outdoor stadium or a retractable roof,
true,
there is a possibility you're going to be allowed to have fans in the stadium. Now, you might not be able to be at capacity, but for example, here in Texas, Governor Abbott had said, if you have an outdoor stadium, you can be at 25% capacity. Well, 25% at NRG is 20,000 people.
If you're, and I know I'm going a little off topic here, but it's just real quick aside. If you're building a brand new billion-dollar, whatever it is, stadium in the 21st century, why do you not have a retractable roof? Like, there should not be rainouts in baseball anymore. There should, I know maybe there's purists that love playing under the lights in the great outdoors, playing through the, I'm like, no. I mean, especially right now, if you're a $1 billion industry, why even subset yourself? And I'm not talking about old stadiums that's been in place for a while.
No, it's just cost. Like, I remember when the Mets were building Citi Field and the Yankees were building the new Yankee Stadium, and those buildings cost over $2 billion each to make. And that was as open-air stadiums. To put a retractable roof on them essentially would have doubled the cost. Now, I understand.
So you mean to tell me Houston can have two retractables, but New York can't get it done?
It's the difference in cost of construction. in New York versus cost of construction in so many other places. What you can build here in Houston, price-wise, for what you can build in New York price-wise, dude, holy cow. I mean, the house in my neighborhood.
Even in business, something as a stadium, because I feel like you get estimates and have people from across the country. I don't see why you would be tied to the prices of New York or New Jersey.
Because it's – that's.
And I don't understand the business, so I'm not disagreeing with
you. It's scarcity of land versus here we have nothing but land.
Fair.
So you've got scarcity of land. You've got union contracts. Everybody's got to be a union contractor. And the union contracts in New York are absolutely insane.
Okay.
So you add all of that in. And then you also add in the fact that how many delays you get for weather, because there's a few months up there in New York, you can't do anything. It's freezing cold. There's snow. There's
you know
ice.
Where you could get something done at? Inside of a retractable roof.
Well, you have to build the retractable roof, which you
can't
do.
Well, that's the chicken or the egg conversation.
If it's 19 degrees and everything you've got out there is covered in ice.
Well, chicken or the egg. After it's built, though.
Oh, listen, they should. I believe that they should have done it, but they weren't gonna float that money. Part of both of those stadiums are publicly bonded.
Really?
So that would have been essentially more public money.
Mm.
And even though they passed through the amount of public money they did, that was a fight. And in any municipality, they don't want to put public money through. It's billionaire welfare. To me, you're a billionaire. Build your own damn building. So you don't, the city or the state should not have to pay a billionaire so that he can have a big stadium and make more money. No, build your own. That's why I respect what the San Francisco Giants did. They built what's now AT&T Park, used to be Pac Bell. That was 100% privately funded. You know, whether you like Stan Kroenke or not, he's building that building in California. That's not, a ton of public money. That's him. So I am not a fan of billionaire welfare and giving these super rich owners public money. I don't think they should do that. But if they're going to spend it and they're going to build it, well, that owner is going to make the decision of, well, am I going to spend the money for the retractable roof or not? But I'm with you. In today's day and age, there is zero excuse for weather to stop a sporting event. That's just patently ridiculous. We hit the home stretch. Next. On Late Hits.
The distance between us, but it took a while once we close. That difference, you turn up like a friend of mine. Every once in a while, the little things make me smile as if one of our own shots.
ESPN 97.5. You're listening to Late Hits on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Presented by Texas Card House. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Patrick Creighton and Jason Braddock.
All right, last segment of the week, actually, here on Late Hits with Patrick Creighton, Jason Braddock, and Aaron Raybould behind the glass. Before we get back into this last segment, end off the week on a strong note, let me speak to all you poker players out there that's just been fiending over the last couple months to get back and play some cash, some tournament actions. Texas Card House is back. The doors are open, and they're being extremely wise in the way they put on their events. They've got cash games. Tournament games just came back this week as well. So Cash Tourney, Texas Hold'em, Pot Limit Omaha. Now, I think they've had three cash games going earlier tonight, a tourney going on, and they've got the social distances. They've sanitized the chips. If you're going to play live poker, there's not a better place, safer place to play than Texas Card House. Go check them out, texascardhouse.com.
All right, so as we hit the home stretch here on an Ask Us Anything Friday, 713-780-3776, you've got 6 minutes here. In an absolute bitch move, the NFL will not honor Dave Portnoy's auction victory to watch Monday Night Football with Commissioner Goodell.
That's pretty funny, though.
Their meow answer for why they're not going to do this, they claim Portnoy failed a background check because of an encounter with NFL security and a 2011 incident when he posted a nude photo of Tom Brady's young son.
What?
Which I gotta believe he must have had some kind of permission to do that.
Wait, Portnoy posted a nude picture of Brady's son?
Which I'm guessing in 2011 must have been like an infant picture?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'd never even heard about that one.
Me neither. So the fact that it's being brought up now, and I'd never heard of it. I mean, I wasn't even in Houston at that time. That's what, you know, 9 years ago. I don't remember any of this.
Doesn't even sound remotely familiar. Aaron, you never heard anything of that as well?
No, I have no recollection of that.
Huh. NFL didn't
I know forget. The two times he's tangled with NFL security.
What all happened to those? I always heard about it. I know him and Goodell.
So the first time was after the Deflategate punishment. He and a bunch of, this is I think when Barstool was still pretty small. Like they had a name, but they were still pretty small. It was before the big buyout. He and like the top three guys at Barstool all had the Roger Goodell clown nose shirts
made, and they
went and sat on the lobby floor where NFL headquarters are down in New York City.
Okay.
And they sat there and they were peacefully protesting, just sitting up there doing a sit-in. And he and the NFL called building security and then had them arrested for it, for trespassing.
Wow.
And then the other time was he was at, was it Super Bowl 51 here? One of the last like two or three Super Bowls, he was there, bought his ticket, everything, wasn't a press credential thing, and they kicked him out of the building when they found out he was there.
Really?
Yep.
Yeah, the NFL hates sports.
Yeah, he tweeted out like where he was sitting on, I think, if I remember right, like the 25-yard line, and he tweeted out a picture. He was like, hey, I'm here. This is Super Bowl. It's awesome. This has been a great week for Barstool. And NFL like top security came and found him in his seat and then drug him out.
Wow. I mean, that's...
So, Goodell's got it in for him.
Yeah,
like, this is a personal issue between him and Goodell. This is no longer like, he was bright. No, this is just personal. Goodell doesn't like him.
So here's the deal on this. Brady, Giselle, and their then 20-month-old son were out on a beach, and paparazzi had taken photos of them and posted them, and then he took those pictures and posted them on his website back in 2011. He also then made commentary on the size of the boy's junk.
Really?
Yeah. Apparently this got a lot of people upset, and they took the pictures down, and Portnoy lost his gig as a regular guest at WEEI in Boston.
Yeah, I would guess so. I mean, there's nothing even funny about that. That's just creepy. You're talking about less than a 2-year-old.
Yeah, see, now if you had a picture of a 20-year-old.
Yeah, I bet you Brady was ready to kill him.
Old, and, you know, it's like a picture from behind and it's got its butt.
Yeah.
I don't think people would have been that big a deal about it because, all right, it's a baby and they're. Their butt. But
this dude's a loser.
That from the front,
mm-hmm.
And then you're like, you know, look how well endowed he is. You know, that's kind of very creepy.
That's creepy. Yeah, that's not what I'm here for.
But, yeah, that's pretty much on brand for Barstool.
How did they blow up so big?
Because they push the envelope on basically everything, and you get that hardcore audience who loves that you are willing to just push every frickin' boundary of good taste, bad taste, whatever. There's a lot of people who like that.
I don't get it.
Look, it's not for me. Some of the things they post are funny. You know, they're just funny. A lot of times, I shouldn't say a lot of times, but there are still some times they go way too far into stuff that just should not be posted or spoken about or whatnot. But that's their brand.
They were young guys who started a website. They wanted to talk sports. They wanted to talk boob. It's kind of like how this station evolved from the get-go. It's almost the way that Fred and AJ were first brought together to do something like that. Like, hey, we're going to do sports and stuff. They started a website like that. And because they were three young guys, they could do all this. This is when Deadspin started getting blown up for the Hulk Hogan tapes and all that crap. And
which eventually put them out of business.
Yeah, which they did whatever they want. They didn't have any corporate backers. You know, For the Win always has USA Today pulling the strings. You know, Larry Brown Sports gets to control his own stuff, but he's big enough and he's not going to piss off any leagues or any sources or anything like that. They didn't care. They did whatever they wanted, whenever they wanted. They didn't have anybody to answer to. And they built a cult-like following that were like, cool, ride or die, Barstool. Ooh. And it got big enough and they were selling enough ad space that a couple billionaires walked in and were like, hey, we'll let you do what you're doing, but we're just going to, you know, cash these checks instead of you guys.
Every now and then you got to...
Yeah, I don't remember how much Portnoy... I think Portnoy made like $100 million from the sale of it.
What did they do before this site? Well, I mean, pretty smart guys.
He was in college, I think. This was like something he started like fresh out of college. I think... I don't remember which... If it was like graduate degree or undergrad.
Mm. Now he tours the world eating pizza. Which really, I should be touring the world eating pizza. I mean, that's...
Seems only fair.
If anybody is a pizza snob, hello. But yeah, I could do that. Just go around the world and just hey, I'm just gonna go to every city and I'm gonna sample pizza in every place and I'm gonna tell you who's good and who sucks. I could do that. I need a little financial backing, but I could totally do that.
Get Portnoy.
In fact, I could even teach the crappy pizzerias how to make good pizza. Unfortunately, this brings us to the end of the program and the end of the week.
So Barstool sold for $450 million with Penn National Gaming.
Wow.
Damn near half a billion bucks for a website. Doesn't suck. Can't hate a guy for securing the bag.
Houston Preeminence, on a side note, sold for $0.00 and no longer exists. So that's my success story.
Big thanks to Aaron Raybould on the other side of the glass. He's I can't with you, man. He's Jason Braddock. I'm Patrick Creighton. We're back on Monday. You have a great weekend, Houston. And there ain't nothing I can do about it.
ESPN 97.5.
I assumed you knew.